Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi guys, it's Mark here. I'm currently away of recording a whole bunch of new episodes for you guys. It's quite difficult to find good shows in Glasgow at this time of year, particularly for the kind of music that I generally tend to cover. So with that in mind, I'm just going to go ahead and do a rebroadcast. So I hope you enjoy it. Hello, welcome to the Curator Podcast. This is episode 19. B. Dolan, this is a fucking pleasure, man. I'm so glad I'm sitting here talking to you.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm sitting here talking to you too. We're both alive. We both made it.
I was talking to my friend earlier on about this, and he's like, B. Dolan seems like an awesome guy. And I was like, yeah, also seems like a scary guy.
I have scary moments, but I contain them. I'm trying to contain them. I'm trying not to let the bear out of the cage.
What happens when the bear gets out of the cage?
I just get in fights in parking lots at the Westmoreland farm stand, apparently. I almost had to, like, scream on this, like, 70-year-old man. Like, he started with me, really. I opened my door, and I kind of bumped his window a little bit, and I was like, oh, my bad. You know, I looked, there's no scratch, no big deal. This dude just started really popping off. And I just looked at him, and I went, shh. I started just shushing him like a baby, and that made him even madder. And then he, like, jumped out of his car, and I realized he was mad old. But he really wanted it. He wanted to fight me. But I was like, either way, I lose in this situation. Either, you know, I knock out a 70-year-old man, or I get knocked out by a 70-year-old man. There's no winning that fight. So I just moonwalked. I moonwalked away, and that made him really, really mad. But he couldn't do anything because he couldn't chase me as fast as I moonwalked.
Because he's a 70-year-old man, he can't. Yeah.
Frail ass.
Old man. I often ask on my Facebook page, I ask him interviewing this guy and if you get any questions for him. And somebody wanted me to ask you this question is, B. Dolan, how does it feel to be awesome?
I don't know, man. It feels like achy. It feels achy to be awesome. You gotta be awesome a lot of nights in a row to be awesome all the time. You're only as awesome as your last awesome.
I was doing my research earlier on and yesterday, and it was an effort to come up with questions that you'd never been asked before.
This would be fun.
I came across an interview you did with Passion of the Weiss.
Yeah.
And now I feel fucking hugely inadequate. That guy knows everything about hip hop, and so do you. Like,
that's so weird. That was a good interview. Shout out Passion of the Weiss and Zilla Rocka, who did that. That interview.
So I sat down to do my question. I was like, oh fuck, what am I gonna do now?
Let's talk about what you're interested in. What are you interested in?
This is not about me, man. It's about you. The podcast is about you. My voice is just a big fucking loud noise.
What are you like? What are you interested in? What do you like?
I like beards.
Beards?
Yeah.
Who cares about beards? It's fucking pubic hair that grows out of your face.
So the one thing that impressed me about that interview is that guy had an encyclopedic knowledge of hip-hop, and so do you. So where does that, like, when did you get so obsessed with hip-hop?
I feel like I was obsessed from the second I heard hip-hop. And so I just like, devoured everything. And, yeah, it's not the type of thing where you can sit down and be like, I want to have an encyclopedic knowledge of hip hop. You know, like, it's just more like your passion for it brings you into it. And you are paying such attention that when dude mentions his hype man, or, you know, like, you know, who's cousin, you know, that Dell and Ice Cube are cousins, and, you know, like, you just pick up these random facts and by just being. And then, yeah, that's why becoming a rapper was almost like just the ultimate fulfillment of my fandom of rap. It was just like, oh, now I get to like meet you motherfuckers and like hear your stories backstage and shit. And yeah, I'm still a fan of rap. I hope I'm always a fan of rap.
Do you still get starstruck when you meet people that you really fucking love?
I don't get starstruck too often. I'm trying to remember the last time I got starstruck. I was in New York once, and I was in Times Square, and I was and Al Pacino walked in front of me. And he walked in front of me wearing a black leather jacket with sunglasses on at dusk. And when I saw him, he looked like fucking Al Pacino in a movie. And I was so shocked that I yelled, "That's Al Pacino!" Like I love fucking. No one was with me. I just started yelling his fucking name. And yeah, so that's when you say starstruck. That's like the last time I remember being truly starstruck. I met Buckshot, who made like the first hip hop 12-inch I ever bought, and I was pretty starstruck then. But yeah, I mean, you know. Having been on the other side of, you know, like you're looking at me like, how does it feel to be awesome? Yeah. I'm telling you, like, I don't know. It feels fucking like I could use some Advil right now and I'm a little sleepy. Like, you know, so that realization is like everybody's just people, you know, except Prince. Prince is probably not a person.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I fucking love Prince. He's like, I wish he was my dad.
Yeah.
I mean, if he was my dad, I'd be small, which I don't know if I'd be okay with being small.
I don't want Prince to be my dad. I want Prince to be a creature that lives in the air.
I think he is a creature that lives in there. He lives somewhere, which is...
Yeah. He's nobody's dad.
Yeah, that's true. He is nobody's dad. That's quite sad, actually.
No, he's nobody's son, either. He just, like, he was formed from music, from the ether. He just appeared one day.
It's interesting you say that, though. I don't think he is a real person. Like, he's never had to be a real person, you know?
Yeah. he's special. Go to everybody listening to this podcast, go to Google. Google YouTube. Go to YouTube. Look up Prince, Tom Petty.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and that they're covering While My Guitar Gently Weeps at, like, I think it was George Harrison's induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Watch Prince's performance in that. It's the most amazing shit I've ever seen.
So it's interesting you brought up Prince. One of the questions that I have is about Kill the Wolf, obviously. And you took on like that Prince-like role with that record.
Oh, yeah, I guess. Yeah, I produced it. I produced everything, yeah.
So you've said in interviews it's all about like evolving the Bee Dolan sound, and it is obviously a hugely kind of cohesive piece of work, which is something which is quite interesting given you put out two mixtapes between that and Fallen House Up in the City.
Yeah.
What was there something, is that something you always wanted to achieve? Like having that Prince-like role, I guess? Or was it just like, this is the next logical thing I have to do for my sound?
It was, well, the me on the production side of thing is something that started in at the same time I started, I mean, almost at the same time I started rapping, because I was in New York City and I didn't really understand how anything worked. And I thought, you know, I was 18. I just moved to New York because all my favorite rappers were from there. And I didn't know, like, I was like, all right, well, you get on stage and get discovered or something. Like, and then I encountered the industry. I had like an early encounter with Def Jam, and I was like, I just realized that side of shit was not for me, and that like networking and all that shit. I was 18 and I was just like, I wanted to make like dark political shit. I wanted to make what I'm making now. And I just immediately thought like, it's never going to sell. And if it does, like, it's not going to be because these people were into it. Like, and so I bought a drum machine and I bought a laptop and I started, before I had a place to live, I bought those things and I started just learning to track my own vocals and make my own demo beats and all that shit. So I've been producing almost as long as I've been recording my raps. I was producing the beats early on. And then I just kind of have run into all these other more talented producers along the way that I then worked with. But also, I've met a lot of people that have showed me stuff, you know, whether it's like showing me records or breaks or showing me techniques or, you know, Alias has showed me a ton of stuff. Buddy Peace has shown me a ton of stuff. And, you know, like it's just become, it's a natural thing. It's like because I have an excitement about what they're doing, I'm interested. I'm like, oh, what are you doing? And, you know, like producers share tips with each other and shit. And so, yeah, it just developed over time. Like, my skills at production developed slower than my skills at emceeing. But, over time, we kind of became clear around House of Bees 2 when that Tin Soldiers joint, I produced that on House of Bees 2. And that was kind of the first time where I was like, yeah, I think my beats are there, where, like, they're good enough for me to rap. I was a better rapper than I was a producer. And the rapper half of me was just like, nah, son, not yet, nah. But, and it just, it became a way to, like, the production side of thing on Kill the Wolf became a way to just tie together all the best of what was available to me. I still worked with over 20 collaborators on that record. Yeah. So to say I just produced it, like, it wasn't on some print shit. It wasn't like I sat down and played every instrument. Like, it was more like I kind of curated the best of what my friends did and then added what I could hear in my mind. The result was cohesive because it was all made through the same process, kind of.
It all returns to, like, that one singular artistic vision you had for that record. Do you feel as though that then, and I don't want to harp on too much, but...
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Record, because obviously you're more than just a fucking album. But do you think that's maybe the most complete that you've sounded like on record at this point?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I run into, you know, fans who have a preference of, you know, one of the early, you know, like, kids always come to the merch table and ask me, like, what's your favorite? And my general answer is, like, the most recent thing I've done is my favorite, because it's most representative of what's closest to where I am and what I want to, you know, like, I still am really proud of every record we've released, which I'm glad I can say that. But in terms of where I'm at now, that's the best representation, I think. In terms of what I'm going to put in and listen to, if I'm going to listen to one of my albums, I listen to the last thing I did until it starts to feel like, nah, this is old. Like, it starts to feel old to me because I've had more ideas and I want to, you know, that's sort of the seed of what starts me working on the next record.
You know? You're kind of in that place now because it took 5 years to write it. You kind of feeling now, holy shit, I've had this for so long and now I just want to move on to the next thing. But obviously you can't because you're on this tour now. So.
Yeah, it's interesting. But, you know, there's still a creative... And it's even a songwriting process involved in making now the songs become live things. So, you know, Rats Get Fat, for example, is finished on the album. But when we went to do it live, I was just like, nah, this isn't going to kill live enough. And so me and Buddy Peace have developed this remix of Rats Get Fat now that we do live that incorporates, like, the Hip Hop Is Dead instrumental and the Slick Rick Children's Story instrumental. Like, so the song changes. It just, you know... By being done live, it changes, you know, you start dropping out words, you start saying different things in certain places, you start, you know, accentuating other parts because the crowd's reaction sort of tells you how to change it over time. So it changes and changes to the point where, like, I go listen to my old albums and I'm like, oh yeah, that's how that song sounded like 10 years ago or, you know, 8 years ago, whatever. So, you know, there's still a part of songwriting going on in the live show and in developing and tightening up the live show. That is cool. It's fun to do that with these songs now.
Speaking of songwriting and kind of generally being creative, I guess, do you, obviously with having your own setup and now, I guess, studio and producing it and all that yourself, are you constantly writing songs at home? Like, is this like a thing that you're obsessed by doing? Just making beats, writing lyrics? Is that something you always do?
Yeah. Yeah, that's everything else I do is in service of that, really. Like even the touring. Like I like touring, I like performing, I like seeing fans. But the real reality is that like all of this is in order for me to be able to continue doing this and to, you know, the most fun I ever have is like, yeah, those days when I've got nothing to do but make a song, you know. But also, I mean, everything, you know, I'd say that's about a third of what I do. The other third is like just strictly business, like emails, t-shirt designs, like, which is also creative. You know what I mean? Like I do something like managing my Facebook and social media is probably the other third, which is not, you know, like I'm not in love with Facebook and Twitter, but you know, like it all at the end of the day, I get to be me for a living, which is incredible. Like, you know, compared to every other adult I know, you know what I mean? Like, you gotta get it. Like, it's an incredible blessing, man. I live in, like, this was my idea for myself when I was 12 years old. When I was 12 years old, I used to like lay in bed and like imagine being on stage. I used to like listen to music in headphones and imagine that I was on stage performing it. And now, I'm 34, 35 or something, and I'm living in the manifestation of a 12 year old's idea. Which is very strange to me sometimes, but it works. It was like a pretty good idea that 12-year-old had. Yeah.
So I guess 12-year-old Jews inside is like, yes, I've fucking done it. I'm fucking here, man.
High five, 12-year-old B.
So I guess that kind of leads into another question I wanted to ask you is, you said for Kill the Wolf, in other interviews, you've said in Kill the Wolf, you wanted to reinvent your sound. So is that constant evolution of your creative and songwriting process? Is that must be, like you just said about doing songs live, that must be a continual process of making yourself better as a creative human being. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I'm forever just studying other music of all kinds. You know, like the beauty of hip hop and digging for samples is that like I'm as much a student of jazz and you know, like world music, and it, you know, I'm forever like just checking records for stuff, but then I've also just become fans of you know, 70s psych rock from Greece, you know, like just sort of weird shit where it's just like, oh wow, look, like that's really weird what they did with that chorus, or like, oh, you hear what that kick sounds like, you know, like just forever studying and hearing other things and hearing what other people are doing and what I like about it and what, you know, it sparks ideas I think that if you listen to my catalog over the course of it, I've gotten better and better at song structure, at making songs, especially like when I first was trying to rap, when we first started rapping, man, we just were like cypher kids. So we would just rap for 300 bars, just raps. And then like no one understood what the fuck a chorus was or what a 16 bar verse was, or, you know, like a breakdown or any of that shit. So all that shit I've learned over time, you know, like on Kill the Wolf, I feel like it's got the best choruses I've ever had. You know, like that was really something I wanted to work on after Fallen House, Sunken City. Like those choruses work, but they work in like a caveman way. You know, like they were, you know, like, bleed your customer, get yourself free, bleed your customer. Like that's the fucking chorus. I'm gonna say this one sentence 8 times, I guess. Like, and it works because it's just an energy thing, but yeah, I just, like, on this record, I all of a sudden was having ideas for, like, sung choruses. And I can't sing that well, but I would sing a little guide track, and then I would send it off to a more talented vocalist who I had met along the way, you know. So, I think I've just been trying to get better and better. I'm still trying to get better.
I want to dispel a little myth, I guess. I started at the start of this interview by saying B. Dolan seems like a scary guy, but when he talks about his music like he just did there, just give you a little insight into what it looks like here. Fucking face just lights up, man. Like, looks so happy to be talking about the shit that you love. Like, that's... And you get, like you said, you get to be yourself for a living. But one thing I was wondering, as you were saying that, is a lot of MCs just... They work with producers. Do you think there's a lot of MCs which would like to be... like you with the producer aspect, or are they okay with being like, I'm not entirely sure if you're the norm or if you're the exception, if that makes sense, in terms of crossing over the skills you have. Like, how do you feel about that?
Well, it's a cliche. A cliche is rappers that want to produce. It's like actors that want to direct. Like, yeah, everybody wants to, but a lot of people shouldn't, you know. I don't know if that's the norm. I think, like I said, because I started such a long time ago, I was aware, I had a self-awareness. Like, I'm very, something that I think is really critical for artists that I've been blessed with is like an ability to know when I just made a piece of shit, you know, like an ability to step outside of myself and my ego and look at something I created and go like, this is not good enough. Like, that's really critical. Or either that, or you need someone that can do that for you. Like, that's what a producer does, you know, in the more traditional sense. But I haven't had that for a lot of my career, so I've had to know myself. You know, I have peers that I check in with that, like, I know will give me good feedback. But I don't know. I don't know what everybody else is doing. I know of a couple rappers I can think of, some who are big in deals right now that have just recently tried to like produce for themselves, and I'm not feeling it as much as when they were working with other producers. I mean, maybe some people feel that way about me. I don't know. You know, like, I know, I'm sure there's some people that will like want me to do another album with Alias, and me and Alias have talked about doing another. I'm not totally committed to like every B. Dolan album from now on is going to be self-produced. I mean, I actually have been working with a couple different producers lately and going the other way. And recently just worked with a producer who does take more control than I've ever given anyone. And you know, was just involved in my process from the minute I heard the beat, which is new. You know, like, it's, for me, it starts with like, it's like weird kind of scatting and then like maybe some freestyling to just figure out like where in the pocket of the rhythm I want to talk. And yeah, this dude was like listening to me doing that and going like, yeah, do that. Ah, yeah, but all right, leave space. Yeah, but okay, yeah, that's a chord. You know, like, which is it? Which, after 5 years of making all the decisions, that this is new to me now. You know, like, so I look for the thing that I haven't done yet more than anything, really. That I wandered so far from your original question, but...
I think you answered it, actually, so it's fine. I'm just conscious of time now, so I guess it's probably a good idea to wrap this up. I could talk for hours about this shit, man. It's fucking so cool. But is there anything else you want to say or anything you want to ask me before we finish?
Are you fulfilled in life?
Is anyone fulfilled in life?
Sure, somebody is.
Can we find that person and kill him?
No, because he's a kid.
Oh, that's a moral quandary. B. Dolan, it's been awesome. Thank you very much.
Yeah, good looking out. Peace.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
B. Dolan, such an awesome guy. I was quite scared to talk to him. You know, he's a really intense guy, really intense dude. But, you know, he's not really like that. He is like that. You can tell he's a very deep thinker. He's a very pensive guy. But he was a joy to talk to. And I'm really glad I got the opportunity to do that. So yeah, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Please drop me a rating and review on iTunes if you can. That would be smashing. Until next time, bye bye.